invigorating breaths, meditation and prayer, contemplation. Excuse me. It's about waking up. Some people think it's about relaxing. Well, you can be relaxed and awake, I hope. So maybe we would say wakeful relaxation. Or Hazarat and Icon calls it mystic relaxation. Your belly with breath. Let that area become very relaxed. You know, this is the root of the heart. If there's a contraction there, then the actual, we're cutting off the root of the heart. So allow the belly to become, like in traditional, it's actually from the sutras of Lord Buddha, they talk about it as a pot belly meditation. So you can let your little pot belly pooch out here. It's a good thing. And let that center become relaxed. It's such a vital center. If you think about it, it's where we get the nourishment from our mothers in her womb, you know, through that umbilical cord, and all of the nerves flow from that area. That's the center of our being, at least in the physical sense it is. So breathe deeply and feel relaxation enter there. Each cell of your being, both breathing and being breathed. And it's also as each cell is a singing bowl, everything tuned to a certain pitch. And we'll face the east, and we'll say the invocation, and we'll also say the psalm, the morning prayer, as we did yesterday morning. Those that know the movements, would you stand towards the front with me? And those that don't, just gently follow. Again, it's not about the form, but it's about the heart that's brought to it. And these gestures have great meaning and significance. But it also isn't an aspect of mind that we're trying to develop here. It's an aspect of heart. So it's these kinds of gestures, like they're graceful and they're beautiful. You know, when we make those gestures, we appear to be beautiful and we appear to be giving offerings to people. You know, when we make really perky, jerky movements, it's not nice, is it? It feels so abrupt and harsh, like we're cutting through something. So as you might not know the movement, so don't do like this, just go, oh, they're raising their hands. Oh, they're putting their hands together. And I turn sometimes to show you the gesture, and I know that maybe confuses people because they actually think that's part of it. Actually, there's a part where the hands just get folded here, or we're making this gesture. And then we make that sign of the cross that we talked about yesterday. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. That's the meaning of that gesture. Can you hear me, Charles?
And this one I can.
Okay, good.
And this one is right there.
I greet thee with all humility.
Yeah. I greet thee with all humility. Keeping in mind again that Anayat Khan says a number of times that especially those two prayers, the psalm which we're saying now and the noonday prayer Salat, are the two pillars on which the message is built. It's very significant. And I'd like to take a moment here also, and everyone is free because Sufism is about spiritual liberty. The only thing Hazrat Anayat Khan asked, the only thing he asked, was to not have the words of the prayers changed. It's the only thing. And it was one of the few things he wrote down. Other things were spoken, but he wrote these down. Now, I know that there are some movements about changing those prayers, and if it was appropriate in a certain condition, one could say that the prayer is inspired by Hazrat Anayat Khan and therefore changed. But we don't say it's the prayer of Hazrat Anayat Khan and change it. You know, he was a great musician. He understood rhythm. He understood vibration. And can you imagine someone changing the note of the great symphonies? Bach or Brahms? He had this reputation in India. He had the highest awards. And India is a country which really respects music and the classifications of their musicians. It's not like other countries. It's a very big part of the culture. So think about that, please, and have some consideration, at least in your personal practice. My students, please maintain that respect. And also don't be dogmatic about it. If you're in a group and they want to say something different, it's okay just to go a little quiet or participate. But understand this that he asked of us. Okay?
Illuminate our souls with divine. give sustenance to our bodies, hearts, and souls. Use us for the purpose that Thy wisdom chooses, and guide us on the path of Thy own purpose. Draw us closer to Thee in every moment of our lives, until thus we be reflected, Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy,
double numbers, double-digit numbers, are called master numbers, you know, like 11, 22, 33, 99, so on and so forth. They're said to be two hidden names. And even though the message of an icon became something other than, it was really a non-Islamic Sufi movement. If you find it categorized, it does say there are non-Islamic Sufi organizations, and the message of an icon was categorized as such. So, but you have to remember, he was still influenced by his culture, and he was raised in a Muslim household. So there are some of those practices. However, not much did he give in Arabic. Even the zikr phrase he gave was from the Persian dialect, but more influenced by Zoroastrian tradition. So, but the numbers are because of these sacred numbers that we find in sacred texts. Did that answer the question?
Yes, based in Islamic tradition.
Yeah. So you see in the tasbih, usually 101 beads, because they're 33 beads and they're divided, they're 99 beads they're divided every 33, which adds an extra one. They also say that they're two secret names of God in the Quran, so it's 101. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Did you get more information than you wanted?
It's more to contemplate.
Yeah, it is. Or sometimes we just get in our own way of thinking.
And I always thought I heard something like it continues too. If it's a certain
That's very good. Thank you.
It continues on, and if it's in a zero, like if you were to do something for healing or something, you wouldn't want that to continue, so it would be a number ending in zero. But I don't know if that's just something I made up. I read that.
Did Hazrat Nikon classify it as non-Islamic? But yet it came.
There is a Gafika, and I could send anyone who wants that Gafika. In 1923, when the Articles of Incorporation happened for the Sufi movement, which was the original Sufi organization, as you know, in Geneva, there was also a statement that was made, and he said, and I'm almost quoting it exactly, I should carry it with me, "I owe everything to my teachers and to the Sufi lineage. However, the account has been paid in full, and the account is now closed. This is a new message."
But the previous account was
But in terms of the Sufi movement and how it's continued its line, it does not connect its lineage back to that. It began with
the teaching college classes, they will say it comes from the roots of Chishti.
That's not right.
I've seen references to the Inayati Chishti movement, to that as a lineage. I guess that's not correct.
It's not. According to my sources, which I consider quite reliable.
You mentioned the difference. Well, you mentioned that Nikon gave the Zikri, and I think you said Persian or the Arabic one. Could you briefly?
In Arabic, you use il, I-L. In Persian, el. Okay. And it's la elaha el alahu. And in the Zikr of Nikon, the reference is always to the heart center. It's never, it's a very Jamal, meaning a very receptive zikr, a very feminine dimension of zikr. So we don't have the Jalali aspect, you know, the head doesn't come up and, you know, that. It's a very different atmosphere. And everyone, you know, there are purposes in all of it, of course. And Anayat Khan actually gave a practice, I may have that paper, where he talks about the pronunciation of the zikr. And he talks about a practice that precedes the zikr. I did it last fall camp, where it was really very Jalali with the el, 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 and then the hu. And then you begin the more receptive. It's kind of like you can exhaust the energy that's built up. It's like the pressure valve. You can let the pressure valve off a little bit. We have that in our bodies as well. And then we can become more receptive to the zikr. So it's a different attitude, a different atmosphere.
The form that was presented last year and before that is exclusively the form in which he presented the zikr.
Yeah, and there are papers and there are notations in his own handwriting for all of that as well.
The only thing I want to say about the Chishti, I think Mershi Samuel Lewis had a connection with the Chishtis through that lineage. So
yes, that's right. That's right.
And so that's how I think
through
some
Pakistani.
Confusion through Pakistani and right.
That's right. Yes.
So he had no connection with Chishtis?
Who?
Hazrat Nikon.
Originally originally it was, but as I said, he did make a clear, there are many stories biographical, of which I don't know if any of those are posted. But we've been interviewing his son, Pir Murshid Hidayat Inayat Khan, and what we've found out from him is that that he made such a definitive break. He brought women into the zikr circle and integrated them. There were a lot of things that were very counter to the traditional Sufi organizations, that there were even threats made on his life.
This
was, he was that revolutionary at the time.
I've I study a lot of the history, and this actually makes more sense. This is the question I've been asking
yes.
for 30 years.
Yes, I'm glad you asked
it. I ask Kerbalayi that, because it is, you can see, if you study Sufism of the world and the 20 other orders, the original 20 orders of Sufism, there's this disconnect, and you think, this
yeah.
completely clears it up.
I'm glad.
You asked that question for 30 years.
Well, thank you. And I've been, you know, this is why I feel such a privilege that some of us have had the opportunity to meet his son, who, you know, was there. He was living it. You know, he was there when his father left. He was there when the brothers, we know very little of, the companions is what they're called, but precious brothers that carried on the lineage after his passing and had their own special beauty in the way they brought that forward. But the commitment wasn't necessarily to Hazrat and Icon. The commitment was to the message, which they saw distinct from the personality of the being of Hazrat and Icon, and that's very important, I think, to say. The other thing that I do know, and this is again eyewitness account from Pir Murshid Hidayat, there was a paper that was given to Hazrat and Icon, the silsila. You know, we're always talking about the silsila, and we're adding people to the silsila. When the cornerstone of the Universelle Temple was set in Seren, France, and there's film footage of this, by the way. This isn't just some accounting of a childhood memory. You see it on the film. He took this paper. People were allowed to put things under the cornerstone. You know, it was like a time capsule. And he put the paper of the silsila under that. And when asked why, he said, when there is, when one wishes with respect, but to make a break with a link and a chain and to erase all memory is given to the earth.
But he did, in his last days, he did return to the site of the grave of his teacher. Is that correct? That's what I recall.
He went to Nizam al-Din Ali's Basti, but that I don't believe was his teacher. That's of another generation. He loved the atmosphere there. It is very beautiful in a quite an awful part of the city, by the way. But it's like a paradise little garden. Shall I read something now from... I'm really off my track, but is it okay?
Yes.
Okay. It says, message given by Pir Murshid and Icon at the American Radio in 1926. This is a transcript. Beloved ones of God, Sufi message is a message today being given to humanity. It is not a message, always message is capital M, by the way. It is not a message of the East, but it is the message of the soul, the spirit. The word Sufi means wisdom, which comes from the root Safiya. It is the work of that wisdom to give the message today to humanity in order that people may come together in a better understanding, arising beyond the different sections of castes and creeds which divide mankind. The Sufi message is an answer to the cry of humanity today, at this moment when materialism is all-pervading and commercialism is continually on the increase. The Sufi message respects all religions, recognizes all scriptures, regards all prophets held in esteem by large sections of humanity, and is the source and goals of all. His wisdom is one. and this was recorded at Sanders Recording Studio in New York. They were very specific. You get the address. 116 West 48. USA. It's very clear, isn't it? It also seems appropriate, and again, I'm a little bit off my track, but do you find that when you're trying to explain what Sufism is, you often define it by what it is not?
Yeah.
Well, it's not that. It's not that. It's not that. Is it true? I mean, I don't know. I find that I hear people do that. I find myself groping. May I read this little statement about what is a Sufi?
Mm-hmm.
Such a beautiful statement. And this is actually by Pir Mürşid Hidayet Inayat Khan, and it is, his writing is so succinct. He does write as well as lecture, but if you read each line, it's like, oh my God, you could contemplate that for a lifetime in a way. It's very full. So this is, he asks a series of questions, and he answers them, and he says, what is a Sufi? One who does not separate himself from others by opinion or dogma, and who realizes the heart as the shrine of God. What does the Sufi desire? To remove the false self and discover God within. What does the Sufi teach? Happiness. What does the Sufi seek? Illumination. What does the Sufi see? Harmony. What does the Sufi give? Love to all created things. What does the Sufi get? A greater power of love. What does the Sufi find? God. And lose? Self. Then he quotes his father, Hazrat Inayat Khan. The word Sufi has been ascribed various origins, among them words meaning purity and wisdom. The Sufi, therefore, is one who has discarded all that does not belong to his innermost self and who has cultivated the garden of the heart, for there is no other place where wisdom grows. Again, Inayat Khan. The Sufi is the one who has two points of view, his own and that of the other. I remember one time, maybe some of you were there, but Wally Ali had come to Kansas City, and he's such a fine teacher, and he's really, I really respect what he's doing, and Pir Shabda also in initiating this new development of the inner school of the Rouhaniyat and these classes that he's making available to people. It's very important to vitalize and stabilize that inner esoteric school for the Rouhaniyat. It's beautiful work he's doing. But I remember him asking that question, you know, what is kind of the heart of Sufism? What is the significant, what's the kernel? You know, and the answer was being able to see from one's own and the other's point of view. And that's what Inayat Khan's talking about, you know, the brotherhood, sisterhood work.